Create Art Podcast, KDOI Rebroadcast, Film as Art. Hello, friends. This is Timothy Kim O'Brien, your head instigator here at Create Art Podcast, where I bring my 20 years of experience in the arts and education to help you tame your inner critic and create more than you consume. This episode is a rebroadcast from my old show, KDOI Podcasting. And in this show, I talked with my good friend Ken Reed, who is a filmmaker. Now, I met Ken while I was working for the federal government. We both worked together, and we discussed a lot of things that inspired him. He started off in his youth a big fan of comedy. And in his early 20s, he started working in the comedy field and joined up with the Army. And then later on in his 30s, he took a screenwriting class at Columbia College, and that provided him with his escape from reality that he needed at the time. Now, he and I worked on another project called Word Up. That was a poetry slam done by Salsation in Chicago. And basically, it was a slam poetry / improv kind of thing. So we go into that. We talk about his first films in his early 30s, where he was doing 24 and 48-hour film festivals, where you create a film in 24 or 48 hours. And we go into his advice for folks just getting into the art world. And we also talk about mentors that he had that gave him some really sage advice. And then we go into a discussion of his creative process. Now, at the time that I was doing KDOI podcasting, I had the Satanic 7 questions. And Ken scored an 8.5 out of a possible 7 points. So, sit back and take a listen to this old episode of KDOI Podcasting. And if you would like to join us here on Create Art Podcast, make sure that you email me, timothy@createartpodcast.com. And all of our links are in the show notes for social media. So go out there and create more than you consume. And enjoy this discussion of film as art. DJ Vulture with their bumping and bump bop music. DJ Vulture has been with us, oh my God, for so many years through so many iterations of Kimo's Den of Iniquity that we just want to thank him. We're happy that he's no longer sleeping in the bathtubs anymore. And you may have noticed that my voice is a little bit different. Well, folks, recently I did have some neck surgery and they had to move my vocal cords. So instead of my vocal cords being in the front of my throat, they're in the back of my throat. Kind of amazing, modern technology, you gotta love it. But that's okay, because we've got an extra special guest here for us today. Good friend of mine, he has been on the show, Kimo's Den of Iniquity, before as a voiceover actor, and I'm very excited to bring him on here. We're going to reveal who he actually is to the world here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring it to you my good friend, Ken Reed. Ken, how are you this evening?
Man, I am good. I am good. Trying to stay cool here in California, and I'm doing good.
Excellent, Ken. Excellent. Now, I always like to do a little transparency with everyone. You and I know each other. We used to actually work with each other when we lived in Chicago. Not together. I didn't live with you in Chicago.
That's correct.
I tried not to. I lived near you. I was happy to be in your presence.
But we worked together. And one day, you know, we just kind of sat and met and started talking with each other and discovered, you know, a mutual fascination with art and strange things. And it evolved into you doing some voice work on the previous iterations of Chemo's Den of Iniquity, where we did that on Blog Talk Radio and other things. And I kind of want to get into, first and foremost, you know, what your art form is. What do you get into? What kind of motivates you? So from our conversations and from what I've done with you, you're a film guy, right?
But to give you a little bit of a background, if you don't mind.
Oh, please do.
Yeah, when I was very young, a lot of kids were out playing. I was also. But when I came back in, I had a different type of escape. I was a kid, and I loved, like, the Dick Cavett Show, Johnny Carson, Letterman, Benny Hill, stuff like that. So I've always been in love with comedy in one way or another. The Marx Brothers, that was probably one of my biggest influences. So I've always loved the lore of comedy, and I've always loved to be a part of it. So I think at an early age, my wit was a little bit, I'm not bragging, but I think it was a little bit quicker than most of the kids, because I was giving like Groucho Marx jokes to like 9, 10-year-olds, and they were looking at me like, what the hell's wrong with this dude? So I've always had a joy for it, and I've always stuck with it, but I really didn't start doing anything artistically with it until I was in my early 20s. And so that's pretty much a start of how I got into it.
So we're looking at the early 20s, the 1920s or your 20s?
Yeah, I was out there flapping. You know, I was doing a flapper type of thing. Yeah, I was. No, in my early 20s, you know.
Gotcha. I was going to say, because we're pretty close in age there. So I was going to say, I don't remember you out there in the 20s when I was flapping, but there's a lot of reasons why I don't remember a lot of the things in my 20s.
Right. Understandable. You know, we don't have to go into that now, but yeah, I understand.
Well, I don't have my couch here with me. Otherwise, I'd sit on my couch and let you analyze me if you really want to.
Well, you know what? I'm not in that business, but if you like, I can do it. I can give you a really pretty quick snap judgment, but we don't have to.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, we'll skip. We'll save that for the next interview, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
So you started, you know, with the comedy in your 20s, we're going to jump a little bit ahead in time. You and I actually worked on a project with Ramon Cherez, who we've interviewed in a previous episode here on Word Up, Poetry Slam.
Yeah.
Now, with that Poetry Slam, I'm going to remind everybody, because that episode is coming out on the 18th, I'm sorry, on the 16th of December. In that episode, we talked to Ramon about kind of the concept of that. It was a poetry slam with improv. Now, for you as a comedy guy with film, you know, having kind of a stage presence, how was that for you? I know I didn't prep you on that question before this interview, because I'd like to zing you on a couple of times. It's just my whole way of getting the improv out of you. But how was that for you, writing your poetry and then doing the improv piece on that?
Well, I have to tell you one thing, and I have to thank you for this, actually, because we were talking at our job. We don't have to really go into what our jobs were, that kind of mundane existence, but still it was a job. And we were talking for a little bit, and you know how they say that real recognizes real, and I think crazy recognizes crazy?
Yeah.
I think it was a little bit of both for both of us. And you were the one that kind of hit me up to the this poetry slam. And you actually told me. You told me two things when I first met you, and I didn't believe both of them. One of them, maybe. One of them, you said, you know what? You're going to enter and you're going to win. I said, really? I said, I don't know these dudes. Said, you're going to win. And then you also said that the Bears would not win another game. And they were like up like – they were like 6-0 or 6-1.
Yeah.
I was like, you said the Bears would not win another game. I didn't get how you got both of those right, but – You did. I remember. You remember that?
Yeah, and that's how many years ago, and they still haven't won a game yet.
Yeah, that was 2013. But it was something because you first told me about this Poetry Slam, mm-hmm. and I came out to see it. And I remember sitting up front at the front of the audience, and I was looking at it, and I was saying, you know what? I think I might be able to do that. So fast forward to our first night of rehearsals. I don't know if you remember this, but I froze up.
No, I do remember. Yeah, you did. Yeah.
I froze up and I was looking at everybody practicing. And I'm like, dude, I am not, this is not my thing. And I got up on stage and I just did something that it was like an out of body experience. It was something that wasn't me. And I got off and I was like, oh, this sucks. I feel horrible. And then I talked to you. I said, man, I don't know what's going on, man. And you were like, just be you. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, I'm fucking crazy. He said, just be you. You don't have to think of. And that was my problem, trying to think of something, trying to remember something. That's what hurt me. But when I just flowed off the top, you know, for the other part of the Poetry Slam, the improv thing, that was more of me. So after I got into that mode, I was good. And it turned out pretty good.
I think it did. Yeah, because you actually won one of the Word Up Poetry Slams. And you did really good at it. And there's still there's still YouTube videos out there. We'll have those in the show notes.
Are you serious? For everybody.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, you can still get them.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's because this was done under Salsation, which is based out of Chicago. And if you do go onto YouTube and go onto the Salsation channel, I'm almost 100% sure. I will double check. But yeah, there's a YouTube video of you doing your piece.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay.
So there you go. And it can live in infamy.
I will do so.
Like most things on the internet.
Yeah, okay. I did know. This is the first for me.
There you go.
But yeah, that was actually really cool because it was one of those platforms where artists can come up and display their whatever gifts they had. So that was good. The only advice I would have given, even though everyone was a lot more seasoned than I was to play the room.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's
That's
always a hard thing with poets and improv folks. And that's kind of the reason why I wanted you in that, because you were a interesting meld of the two. You weren't 100% in one, 100% in the other.
Right.
You were able to see that room and play it. And I don't want to say that you're an amateur at it, but because you didn't have the hang-ups and all that mm-hmm. a poet would have or an improv person would have, you just played the room. And you played it like a violin. Now I'm patting you on the back here while we're doing this interview. So enjoy that nice pat on the back.
I can pat you on the back also, because honestly, that's where also the room does not necessarily recognize talent.
Right.
Because if I may say so myself, mm-hmm. you were the most talented mofo in that room. So the second one I did, mm-hmm. you were hands down the best of the night. If anyone has that video, we got to see it. But speaking of playing a room, I remember that night it was some snotty young ladies up front.
Yeah.
And I think they were deeply offended. Clearly they couldn't have been artists because they were deeply offended with your poem. And I think that was kind of funny because if you would have played in a room full of other poets and other artists, clearly they would have recognized Rail. So
I think that was the poem, and I'll have to try to find the video on it, about tea drinkers. And I think they were drinking tea.
That's right. Yeah. You were talking about, that was so cool.
Never trust a tea drinker. Never. Oh my God.
Well, I never.
Absolutely. And I think they were drinking chai tea too. Oh my God. Wow. Yeah. So, let's back up a little bit. Again, we're glossing over this whole film thing. And that's what, for me, I enjoy art that I don't 100% understand all the things behind it. I'm a theater guy. I'm a music guy. I'm a poetry guy. So I can go to a show and pick it apart and all that kind of jazz. But when I go to a film, like an indie film or something like that, I like to be taken away by the magic that's there. And I'd like to you to talk to us a little bit about your experience with indie film, because I remember seeing some of and being part of your work in indie film.
Well, this starts back. This is what I was kind of referring to when I talked about my early 20s.
Sure.
First went to Columbia College in Chicago, and I went there for screenwriting. And during that time, it was really big because you probably know they would show you, like, you always have to take the history of film, and they show all of these historic films, you know, like Metropolis or whatever, and you're sitting there watching it. I tell you, as a child, I loved film so much because it was the escape that I needed from my harsh reality. So ever since I was in my 20s, I really, really could not wait to be a part of film in some way or in some type of situation. The problem with that was I lived on the south side of Chicago. Everyone would tell you, dude, why are you pursuing your dreams? You need to make some money. So I went to Robert Morris for some computer bullshit and threw it away by going in the Army. So all of that was for naught. Mm-hmm. So I actually didn't do my first film until I was in my 30s. And that was when I was back in Chicago, and we did several 48-hour or 24-hour or 72-hour film festivals where you have to create a film in a certain amount of time. I mean, every part of the film. And I wrote in all of them, and on a couple of them I produced, and one of them I co-directed. So that was a great, great experience. And that's where... and honestly, you may not know this, or maybe you do know this. Even the thing that you helped me with, the poetry slam,
yep.
One art transcends into another, and they can piggyback off another. I can be inspired by a conversation with another artist like yourself, especially when you're around a world. I work for the government now. You're around a bunch of people mm-hmm. who don't talk about things that we may talk about.
Right.
Just having a conversation with you right now can inspire me to go and write. When you're surrounded by a world where you have to pay your rent, and I'm not knocking that. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for the job that I have, but you can get stuck in putting your art to the side. I've done that so many times. I have scripts, poems, things that I've written that I've never actually got a chance to pursue because I'm busy living. So to get back to your question, I'm sorry, I kind of went off the rails a little bit.
Oh, no. It's all about going off the rails.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm Amtraking. and so it was that love of film from when I was a kid up into my 20s. I didn't actually get a chance to take part of it until I was in my 30s. And we had a nice crew of people. Everybody worked together. The bad side about that crew kind of got dismantled because of egos. That wasn't mine. I'm a totally giving person.
Sure.
The problem is, when you want to push for others, they don't push for you. So that kind of dismantled and I haven't actually done anything as far as film since the last project a few years ago, but I'm anxious to get back to it.
Gotcha. So kind of, one of our big pushes here at Chemo's Den of Iniquity, where we create more than we consume. As you can see, I'm hitting that tagline as much as I can. So let's say somebody's just Joe Blow out of the street, and they're like, hey, listen, I'm not going to go to Hollywood and da-da-da-da-da, but, you know, maybe I should do, get hooked up with somebody that's in independent film, or hook up with somebody that's in podcasting, or hook up with somebody that's in painting, stuff like that, poetry slam, stuff like that. What's your recommendation? I mean, you know, we've talked about you had the passion to go in and pursue it after a career in the military and go ahead and seek it out. How would you, for somebody that's got to pay the bills, just like you and I do, because I work for the government, I actually work for the Army now, and I have for a while, but How would you direct somebody to go out and do that?
My advice would be to do it. Find the time to do it. Because if it's truly in your heart, because it's in my heart, it pains me when I am not in some way being creative, even if it's just for me. I could be around a bunch of people and I'll tell a joke that I know that they probably won't even understand where it's coming from. But I'm at a point where I'm selfish enough where I'll say to myself, that's okay. That joke was just for me. So I would say if you find an outlet, if you're working a job, if you have to work and pay the rent, find some time to do something that keeps you ticking, because without being artistic or without being creative, that outlet is like a huge void for many of us. And it will eat you up inside if you don't do it. If you have to work, find some time to do it, maybe in the evening, whether it's jumping on the stage in front of supportive people. If it's about submitting your work to contests or things like that, do it. There's so much time that I wish I can go back when I was in my 30s or when I was in my late 20s to tell myself, I know you're working, I know you're doing this, but at least try to do this. Try to do that. I wish I had someone pushing me like that. So I would push them by all means. If you can do it, do it. You know, if you live at home with your parents, I'm not knocking it. If you're not so hurt, if you're not so enamored by getting out on your own, if you have some time, give yourself a little window. Pursue everything you can in that window. And just see what happens. Throw stuff at the wall, see what sticks, you know? Yeah. Do it. I mean, it will eat you. Like, I'm here now. Like, I moved to California. Mm-hmm. Part of it was I wanted a new scenery, but part of it was also saying to myself, I am not going to get any younger. I have to make a jump. Yes, I'm working right now, but I'm trying to get to a point where I can say, you know what? I'm going to look at you in the back mirror. I'm going to take a jump. I'm going to just go and do some stuff, whether it's stand up, whether it's pursuing contests like I talked about before, like little screenwriting contests or things like that, being a part of a crew, stuff like that. I'm just going to throw shit to the wind and just try it before I die, you know? Absolutely. So I would do it. You're still alive. Do it, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, the way I look at it, and maybe you look at it the same way, is that, you know, you got all these billions of people out there, and, you know, everyone's got their own thing that they're doing. Why not you? Why can't you do some art? You know, yes. What's stopping you? The world needs your art. You know, it's an expression of yourself, and we need that. We need to know what it is. There's a ton of places out there that will help you put it up. KDUI Podcasting is one of those places that'll help you put it up. You can go to our website, email us. We'll get you on the show. We'll get you hooked up with our network, and we'll get you with somebody that can mentor you. Speaking about mentors, did you have any good mentors that you can talk about? Did that kind of help you at all?
It did help me. I remember when I was in Columbia College, I was a troubled kid. You know, I had some problems at home. I lived on the South Side, and, you know, whatever problems there were getting to school, and actually going to school was a problem itself, because coming back home to the hood, you didn't get support. You know, you were actually you were frowned upon for going to school, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was hard being, you know, which is kind of champion now, being a geek or being a nerd. But do you remember back in the day when it wasn't fun being a geek or a nerd?
Oh, yeah. It's still sometimes you can be a pain in the butt.
Exactly. So back then it wasn't champion, and I grew up in a hood. So it was really, really hard to do that. But I had this one mentor. I remember her name. She was a Persian lady at Columbia College. Her name was Mirnaz Saeed Gaffa. I'm probably butchering the name, but I never forgot. She looked at some of my stuff and she said, you know what? You have talent. It's unpolished, but you have talent. And to have one person, and you notice it was original because she didn't say it to everyone else. So it felt good. And it made me think, wait a minute, maybe I have something here. You know, for her, she didn't have to tell me that.
Right.
Little things like that, it really helped me and it really pushed me. And then throughout the years, I think if you let your ego go, you can have mentors in a lot of different ways. Not someone who leads, who's like your life coach, mm-hmm. but you can learn from everybody. You can have someone be a temporary mentor. I mean, like I said, when we were doing weekly podcasts, not podcasts, but we were doing weekly blogs, audio blogs, that little burst of expression, dude, that does wonders. That did wonders. You know, it mattered not how much of an audience. It mattered that 2, 3, 4 of us were vibing and we felt good off of that shit.
Absolutely.
That's what it's about. And that was a great platform and it felt good to release because, you know, it's needed for a lot of us. It's needed for me. So that was a great, great outlet.
Good deal. Good deal. And folks, I have all 65 of those episodes on MP3. And Ken, I'll make sure that you get a copy of them for Christmas.
Okay. And just to let you know, yeah. a lot of that, I was under the influence of I can't really say what I was, but so some of that may or may not have been me. So
it might not have been you. All I know is I've got 65 MP3s. There's a voice in there that sounds vaguely like yours. Yeah. I'll toss it to you. If you want to claim it, you can claim it. If not, I don't know who the hell that was on the phone.
Okay. Yeah.
Good deal. Well, Ken, so let's talk. We hit it a little bit on, okay, you're out in California. You're pushing, for the next project for you. You may not have a project like set in stone right now, but, what do you see in the horizon for you? Do you see more film or, podcasting? Some painting maybe?
I see some of a lot of things, man. One thing that's really, cause I told you I'm kind of in love with Hollywood lore.
Yep.
And one of those places that I really have fallen in love with is a place called the Comedy Store. And you go there, it's got like pictures of Richard Pryor, George Carlin, all the greats have been there. And on any given night, some of the greats can still show up. So I would go there and I would sit there and I would stay there until 2, 3 in the morning on a weeknight. And I say to myself, just like on every other opportunity, just like when I watched the Poetry Slam, and I say, you know what? I think I can do this. When I went to I signed up for it when I was going to school at Northeastern in Chicago. I signed up for creative writing 3 class full of English majors. I was so intimidated and I came out one of the top guys of the class because just because you're an English major doesn't mean that you're creative.
That's
so
true.
Everything that I've kind of said to myself that I think I can do, I did it, you know, and I was able to do it. So I got a lot of shit that I wrote up, a lot of comedy up. I did an open mic before and it felt good, but it didn't feel where I felt like I can be because I'm still trying to figure myself out because the problem with having a lot of influences is you got to find yourself. When you have it's kind of funny because I think what I ended up doing is a mixture between Stephen Wright and Bernie Mac. But it was kind of a schizophrenic type of thing. So I want to do some more stand-up. I want to do some stand-up. I want to get some crews together, get back to my writing and also producing and maybe even some directing. And also I really am into doing some more podcasting. And I have a couple people in mind because I really have a lot of things I need to, like, discuss, like – certain songs like, you know, Ghostbusters and certain theories like, you know, who shot first. Just other little miscellaneous things like the potential of another war happening, but not with humans.
Yeah.
So a lot of shit on my mind.
You know, I've often thought about, and you may laugh at this, but marsupials, specifically lemurs.
Huh.
Have you ever had thoughts about lemurs, like prehensile tail lemurs?
No comment.
Okay. No. We'll save that for another day.
Okay.
Excellent. So folks, we're going to be on the lookout for some great things from Ken here. Ken, it's that time in our show.
It's that time.
For the Satanic Seven questions. Are you ready for the Satanic Seven?
Bring it on.
Okay. Excellent. Now, Ken, I just need to let you know that, we have had one person get a perfect score on this.
Okay.
I was my tattoo artist, Ashley Hutchins. She got a perfect score on this way back in episode number 4. Now, you can get higher than perfect on this. Okay. So I don't want you to be intimidated that somebody already got the perfect. I want you to go for the gusto, knock it out of the ballpark, win one for Chicago. Okay.
All right. That's okay.
Great. All right. Myself, I created these questions. I scored 3 right, 4 wrong. So that tells you how hard they are.
Okay.
I know. How do I get 3 right and 4 wrong?
Yeah.
This audience is tough. They don't let any bullshit go by.
Hey, it's a tough crowd.
It is a very tough crowd. All right. So here we go. Question number 1. Yeah. How would you describe your process from inception to creation to display and presentation?
Okay. My process is first the thought process. It jumps in my head. And for me, the second process is not necessarily writing. I'm more of a typer. But if I'm away from a computer or some type of device, I'll write it, but I would also send like voice messages to myself. And then from there, depending on the venue or what the platform is, the execution stage is the next stage. So for me, it's inception. It's putting it down someplace to keep a visual or audio memory of it, and then just executing.
Okay. Excellent. And I like how you're using the Inception movie title with that as well.
That's right. I couldn't use Dark Knight with this one. So.
You couldn't. No, but you had to use Inception, so I appreciate that. I'm going to give you a full point on that one. So far, you're 1 out of 7.
Okay.
One out of seven. Hey, it's a great place to start because when I started off 0-7, so.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah, I started off wrong to begin with, so. All right. So here's another good question for you. Question number 2. Should art be defined for everyone, or can art be defined for everyone, and should art be defined for everyone? So can it and should it?
Okay. I would say no for the first question. Some people have no artistic reasoning. Art means very little to them because I think you have to have a certain ambition, or you have to either be born with it. Some people don't have any of that. They are foreign to art, anything artistic, whether it's music, nothing drives them. They can hear music, but they won't hear the same song that an artist may hear. So I am of the belief that there are some people that will not get art. Now, the question is, can they, what was the second part of the question?
Well, can it be defined and should it be defined?
It cannot be defined for some people. And I would even jump to say it should not be defined for some people. Because if you have to explain your art, that is okay. Because sometimes art is personal. It's your own reflection or your own vision. You can try to define it to someone. You can try to make them understand it. But that is not something that is a necessity. If they're not an open receptacle, then why even try in the first place? So I would say no and no.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give you full points on that one.
Okay. Great.
Wow. A 2-parter and you nailed it out of the ballpark. You might want to this week. I'm just saying. And the Bears might win on Sunday. I doubt it.
Oh, my God. You jinxed me.
Hey,
jinxed me.
I hope you don't have any money on them because they ain't going to win this Sunday either.
I think they're playing Cleveland or something.
Oh, no, no, no. Cleveland will clock them.
Cleveland will clock them.
Cleveland will clock them. Drew Carey's from Cleveland. He'll beat them.
Oh, my goodness. By himself.
By himself. Yeah, he'll take on the whole team.
Okay.
All right. So, question number three. Oh, this is a personal question.
Okay.
I think I know the answer to this one because I used to work with you.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. Are there people you don't tell that you're an artist? And if you do that, is that wrong or bad that some artists conceal their talent? So are there some people that you work with that you don't tell you're an artist? And if so, is that wrong or bad that some artists conceal their talent like that?
It's a personal question. For me personally, I might put it a different way. I would not tell someone per se that I am an artist, but I may tell them that I'm involved with artistic things. Like I may say that I write. I may say that I do poetry. I may say that I do something like that. Because telling someone you're an artist, it kind of defeats the purpose to a certain extent. So I do and I don't. So that's kind of a... it's hard to find. If I had a yes or no answer, I would say, yes, I do tell people that I'm an artist. And should people keep it to themselves? I think it depends on where you are. It can be frowned upon depending on one's profession, because some believe there are two different parts. There are two parts of the brain, and some may be intimidated if you tell them that you're an artist, because they may feel that, hey, if you're so busy working on that part of your brain, you're not going to have the aptitude to do this job with a part of the brain that we need. So I would say in some cases, no, you should not tell someone you're an artist. Just keep it to yourself and just do your grind on your own. So I would say yes and no. So for me, I would say, yes, I do tell people. And is it okay to conceal it sometimes? I say it is okay, but for me, I don't conceal it. So it's not okay for me to conceal it because that's who I am. You like it or leave it. So for me, it's yes and yes.
This is going to be a hard one for me to grade, man. Going to be a hard one for me to grade.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the full point on that one.
Okay. All right.
Under protest.
But
I'm going to give you the full point on it. I do agree with you on some aspects of that. Especially if you're a brand new artist and, you're popping out there and, you don't know it, you know, I mean, cause there are some artists out there that are about playing games with people and, yes. And they're going to try to eat you alive because that's just sport fishing for them.
Yes.
So I think you have to be careful who you tell you're an artist to and you know, especially in the workplace. And I think you're 100% right on that, especially if you're going for a job or maybe a career upgrade or something like that.
Right.
You're going for a promotion and they find out, oh, he's the artist. He's going to be artsy fartsy on us. So we're not going to be able to have him do strong analytical work. Well, I'm an artist and that's my job every day is doing strong analytical work.
Yes.
You know, and my art helps me do that. Because it keeps one part of my brain focused on a topic, and then it keeps my analytical side of my brain focused on what I need to do.
Yes. Because
both my sides talk a lot to each other. It's my brain is like that kid in high school that wouldn't shut up.
Oh, yeah. That was me.
There you go. See, I think we probably sat together in high school together.
Oh, yes. I had to do something. I could not keep the urge inside to not do something. That's how I am not at work. I have to say something. I have to entertain myself. I do it all the time. Just weird conversations, just anything. Everything reminds me of a song or a movie or something like that. So that's where I am.
All right. So you're 3 for 3 right now. You're 3 for 3. You're doing good. You got 4 more to get a perfect.
Okay. Batting 1,000.
All right. Oh, this one is going to get you. This, you might want to just pass this one. I don't know. Okay, we're not going to pass it. What is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow? And if possible, show your work.
All right, can you repeat the question, please?
What is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow, a swallow that ain't carrying nothing? And if possible, show your work.
Okay. Perhaps you were right. Maybe I should have passed. But I will give an answer.
Okay. Now, okay. I'm going to say a lot of people think they know the answer to this.
Well, I would think they do.
Okay, go for it.
I think it's better to be a swallow than a gulp. And I'll show my work by referring you to this nice film that I remember seeing. It was called The Italian Ramrod Stallion. It was a 1984 porno that was on TV in Chicago. And after 2 hours of the film, I realized I am not into gay porn. So that's my answer.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You not only got it right, you got a bonus point.
Oh, my God. I got it right. Oh, my God.
And a bonus point.
I don't know how I did that, but I got it right.
So you got 5 questions right out of 4 right now. You're 5 out of 4.
Oh, my goodness.
Dude, do you realize that most people say African or European to me?
Oh, really?
Because of the Monty Python reference that is.
Okay, okay.
But you took it totally into a Chicago kind of atmosphere there, and you focused on the word swallow and gay porn.
That's right. That's right.
So automatically right there, you're at 5 out of 4. Fantastic.
All right.
All right. You were rocking it out here. Oh, my God. Right. This is feeling like an old episode of Chemo's Den of Iniquity.
It is.
Oh, God. All right. Question number 5. We've got 2 more to go. Oh, my God. What is the worst piece of advice that you followed, and what was the result?
The worst piece of advice, it doesn't have to be artistic, does it?
It can be anything.
Okay. I remember when I came back to Chicago, this was when I first got out of the Army in 1997. I was a recruiter assistant for the National Guard. I talked to a bunch of guys. You know, I wasn't having much fun or luck with the ladies. They said, you know what, Reed, you got to go out there and be a dog. Call this number. It's like one of those, you remember they used to have those like party lines?
Oh, yeah.
We hook up with chicks all the time. I said, really? Okay. He said, it don't matter. Yeah, you meet a lot of people. So I got on that party line and I connected with this girl over the line. You can't see them, by the way. This is before internet. I mean, before, you know, high speed stuff, you know, it was all telephone. So I was talking to her and she's like, oh, yeah, I'm like, can you describe yourself? She said she looks like Aaliyah. You remember Aaliyah, the singer?
Oh, yeah, I remember Aaliyah.
Beautiful. I was like, oh, my goodness, I hit the jackpot. So we met. We were going to meet to go see a movie. It was some Martin Lawrence film. I think it was, I don't know, Blue Streak or something like that. We were going to meet. And I'm a nice guy, you know. I'm not really good at, you know, turning people down. So we met. So I went to pick her up in some part. I don't know where it was. It was some part of Chicago, some crazy neighborhood. And some chick comes up to the car and she said, you can? I said, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, who are you? I'm looking like, is this her mother? So this broad gets in the car. I'm like, well, yeah. She said, hey, I'm so-and-so. Not one part of her looked like Aaliyah. And not to mention, she looked like about 3 or 4 Aaliyahs. Okay.
Oh my God.
Like you said, I'm a nice guy. So I still go to the movie. And she wants to be close to me. So she grabs my hand and I'm too much of a nice guy to push her away. And she has this huge, like, you know, like Chicago Portillo Italian sausage fingers. And she's holding my hand in the movie. And I'm sitting there thinking like, how did I get involved with this? And I was so, so upset with myself. So ashamed. I wish I wouldn't follow that advice. Even worse, I wish I didn't go to the hotel with her afterwards. But I was just too nice to say no.
So you went through all that and you went to the hotel. You took one for the team.
I was, it's bad because I was really, I didn't want to hurt her feelings.
Sure.
I went to the hotel, and I remember, like, the next day I went home and I was like in almost like in a fetal position,
right?
Wondering what happened and how can I get rid of this person. And she called me up saying, you know what, you don't have to be nice to me, you don't have to call me again. And I was like, oh my goodness, there is a God. So at least I got a little part of it back. I was sunk to a very low, low, but she gave me the out by actually calling me and telling me I don't have to feel sympathetic for her. And I said, okay, well, thank you. And that was it.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, folks, we've heard the soft, sensitive side of Ken Reed here. I think that deserves a point. So you're 6 questions right out of 5.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
We're so close, man. We're so close.
We're taking it.
All right. Now this one may trip you up, okay, but you're a comedy guy though too. So, and you're a film guy. So I don't know if I should shoot this one to you or not. This might be a softball for you, but we're going to try it. If you throw yourself at the ground and miss, what are you doing and how do you continue to accomplish this seemingly impossible task?
Oh my goodness. If you throw yourself at the ground and miss.
Yeah.
And how would you?
What are you doing when you do that?
You're taking a leap of faith. That's what I would think. And how would I do to kind of resolve it?
How would you keep on doing that?
You keep throwing yourself against the ground, and one of those times you're going to fall through the fucking ground. You're going to land on the other side and say, you know what, you fucking ground, I got through you, and now I'm going to come back through the ground and stand on top of you. You keep falling until you actually can actually stand up, you know? Just keep hitting the ground until you finally find a way to not splatter your spleen all over the ground, you know?
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
I'm going to give you a half a point on that one.
Okay. I'll accept half a point.
I'm going to give you a half a point. That's okay, because, I mean, you're still at, out of 6 questions, you're still at 6.5. So, okay. So you're good. You're good.
Okay.
You're still good on that. Throwing yourself at the ground and missing, you're flying. You're flying if you're throwing yourself at the ground and missing.
Uh-huh.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Okay. Okay.
And my first book of poetry. Ken, my first book of poetry, throwing yourself at the ground and missing.
I feel horrible now.
It's too easy.
You gotta understand, there are problems with the fire out here, and I think something's got a little bit too hot towards me.
Okay.
So I'm playing on the fire.
That's why I'm only taking a half a point. I'm only gonna take a half point. This is your last question. You can still get better than perfect on this question.
Okay.
Are you ready for the final question?
I'm ready.
Not the final solution, but the final question.
Yes.
Okay, very good. All right, here we go. If money were no object, and if time were no concern, if resources were unlimited, what project would you attempt? And the second part is, all negative factors eliminated, would you allow this project to be the only work you are known by? So I'm waving my magic wand. I'm saying, whatever you want, you got it. And if you want it, is this the only project you want to be known by? Go.
Okay. I've always dreamed of doing a film that eliminated all cliches in film, which means establish a character. The character dies in the first couple of minutes. Have a black guy that lives throughout the whole film during the horror aspect of the film, and have only backwards music throughout the whole film. It's kind of like a bizarro film, but there are no cliches whatsoever. So have an ending at the beginning, everything, just a complete fucking mashup of the film, but make it successful. I've always wanted to do something similar to that.
Okay. Now, if we can make this happen, is that the only piece of work you want to be known by?
Yes, that'll be my solo.
Ah,
Did I save the answer with a solo reference?
You. Oh my God. That's a point and a half right there.
Okay.
Oh my God. You got out of 7 questions, you got 8.5 right.
Oh my goodness.
8.5. How do you do that?
I don't know myself. I amuse myself at times, you know.
Now, do you want to take that extra 1.5 and give it to the Bears this Sunday to win their game? No. Okay. All right.
I don't want to. No, it's a waste.
You're going to take your 8.5 points and go home.
I'm going to go home with my 8.5 points.
Okay. Fantastic. Yeah. Ken, it has been an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to have you back on my show again. I can't say enough great things about you. It's always an inspiration to have you on here. This is why I do the show, folks, is to connect up with people like Ken here, to connect up with the audience, get you all inspired, but to connect up with people like Ken who really are awe-inspiring. And if you can get in contact with him, and we can do that through the show for you, let this guy inspire you to go out there and swing for the fences just like he did today. Ken, can you give us any good words of wisdom?
Yes. I can give you 2 if that's okay.
Give me 3.
I'll give you 3. Find a mime, go up to him or her, stab him or her in the gut, and see how professional he or she is.
That's our first one.
Okay.
Got it.
If you stick a quarter up a hooker's ass, you probably need change.
Now, here's the question. Do you need change in Canadian coins or American coins?
Okay. Now, that is difficult. I'm kind of thinking you'll probably get rubles.
Now, are you saying that I would get rubles or anyone out there in the public would get rubles?
You will get rubles. Yes.
I will get rubles. Okay, sure. It's the voice, isn't it? It's the voice.
Possibly. Possibly. Okay. And lastly, set your goals high. Kill 2 stones with 1 bird.
Kill 2 stones with 1 bird.
Yes.
That's circling back to that whole swallow question.
That's right, but don't bring that one up because I have some really bad memories, you know.
Understood.
Not that there's anything wrong with that type of thing, you know. I'm not saying anything wrong, but for me, my experience was different, you know.
Well, we will definitely in the show notes make sure that everyone has a link up to that movie. They can have their own experience with it. They can email me here back at kdoipodcasting@gmail.com, and we can talk about that.
We can talk. I'll talk through it. Okay.
We'll talk through it. Talk therapy. I've got a few extra couches here in my house. We can make that happen for anybody.
Okay. Sounds good.
Great. Well, again, it's been my pleasure to have Ken Reed on as my guest for this week's edition of Chemo's Den of Iniquity. Folks, create more than you consume. You can tell we have a lot of fun here. We want you to join in on the fun. Ken did get 8.5 out of 7 questions right. That is our new marker to go for. See if you can beat them. Email us here at kdoipodcasting@gmail.com. Hey, I'm on the Twitter.
Twitter, okay.
Yes, at @KDY_podcasting. So definitely shoot me up on the Twitter. I call it on the Twitter because I'm an old man.
Yeah, I noticed that.
There you go. We've got a Facebook group all set up here for us. We've got a website, KDYpodcasting.com. It's my WordPress site. We're making it pretty. I want everyone to pop on in there. We're going to have great stuff. Next season, Ken's going to come back on.
That's right.
For season 2, we're going to do that movie, but we're going to do it as a podcast.
That's right. Sounds good.
We're going to do it as a podcast. We can make, hey, I got a telethon happening in 2nd season. I got crazy stuff. I got a theme song for an art school coming on 2nd season. I've got people writing books that they don't even know what the hell they're going to write. So 2nd season is going to be awesome. Ken's going to be part of that 2nd season. Folks, thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Take care, brother.